It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Here and hits the ball in the nose. This one may go over the head of Pena, the center fielder. It will. The Longhorns are going to win this game. Here comes Artois. Say goodnight to it, folks. Game one in the books. It's a walk-off over the head. Extra base hit. A walk-off from Eric Kennedy. And Texas is one win away from going back to Omaha.
Breathe the air back home in Omaha.
And Faltini swings and drives to the right center, a base hit. Williams around third. He'll score. Hodo motoring the third base. He'll stop there. It's an RBI double for Faltini. The Longhorns are on the board. Two in scoring position. Still nobody out. Now it's a 2-1 ball game.
Yeah, but don't forget a single face. You can see that boy again.
The 2-0. Swung on and popped up. This one to shallow right. A long run for Cantu coming in, and it'll fall in between. Here comes a run to score to tie it. Hodo scores. Faltini will stop at third. The game is tied. Artois is at second base. Alphonse and Gaston, I got it. You take it. After you. No, after you. It's an error, and the game is tied. The hero from last night, Eric Kennedy, swings to the first pitch. He'll line it right at the right fielder, Cantu, tagging at third. Here comes the throw to the plate. It's cut off. Faltini scores. The Longhorns take the lead on the sacrifice fly from Eric Kennedy. It's 3-2 Texas. The pitch. Swung on, ground ball, right side, knocked down by Ruiz. Throws to first in time to get Antico, but his ground ball scores Ardwan from third, and the Longhorns now lead it 4-2. Here's the 1-0 pitch from Tristan Stevens to Nick Gonzalez. He does bunt it. Out front, Stevens up with it. He'll flip to the plate. The tag is there. Out at home plate. What a flip to the plate by Tristan Stevens. Ardwan puts the tag on Ruiz for out number two.
Sing that song, throw me out.
3-2 pitch to Williams. Swings here and hits the ball well out the deep center. Chasing Pena back to the warning track. You can say goodnight to it. Right over the 405 mark. The deepest part of UFC Udish Park Field. And Cam Williams has put an exclamation point on this Super Regional with a big fly, a two-run bomb to make it 11-4 Texas. Here's the 1-0 pitch from Tristan Stevens to Nick Gonzalez. He does bunt it. Out front, Stevens up with it. He'll flip to the plate. The tag is there. Out at home plate. What a flip to the plate by Tristan Stevens. Ardwan puts the tag on Ruiz for out number two. We'll stretch from Stevens. Here's the payoff pitch to Drew Bruncher. Strike three called. Right on the inside corner. Painted it. Stevens with a pump of the fist as he comes off the mound. And the Longhorns limit the damage in the fourth. Well, that was kind of the highlight montage there for you. There was one play missing out of that montage. The final.
Here's the 1-0
call
pitch
yeah,
from Tristan Stevens to Nick Gonzalez.
No, that's not it. That's not it. That's the bunt one. We already played that one, Snoop. Number nine, the one that says final call there. The one that says final call there.
From Tristan Stevens to Nick Gonzalez.
That's not it. You keep playing the same one over and over. That's not it. It's all right. We know how it ended. Texas Longhorns are going back to the College World Series. And they are going to the College World Series for a record 37th time. Now, I know there's some folks saying they're going to Omaha for the 37th time. That's
not the case because they also have been at the College World Series, including the very first one, Kalamazoo, Michigan, and won their first national championship in Wichita in 1949. So, but it is their 37th time to go to the College World Series. So we welcome back, hour number two of the program. Craig Wade, Jeff Howie, you're over there chuckling.
Snoop, I love you.
You were on a roll there, Snoop. It was going really well.
It was awesome.
It was awesome. And then I think I must have labeled something wrong with the last play.
And then, man, it just...
See the one that I have here where it says number nine, final call?
Let me...
The one that says final call in big capital letters? It doesn't say anything else. It only says final call.
Hold up. Why is that not playing? I got to hear it.
Why do I feel like this is going to be replayed on the triple option at some point this week?
It's okay. Hey, listen, you can have things like that kind of go off the rails a little bit when it's winds up on the plus side. So there it is.
Back to Omaha. That's the bottom line.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And we know that there are two spots still up for grabs, and that those will be contested. The first one starting in about 45 minutes in Columbia, South Carolina. Dallas Baptist trying to make it two teams from Texas getting in there, since Texas Tech got swept out at home by Stanford. And they're playing Virginia. And then tonight we will learn the Longhorns' opponent at the College World Series, when Texas will be taking on, or rather Notre Dame will be taking on Mississippi State. The winner of that will get Texas probably Sunday, and I'm guessing Sunday night.
You know, Craig, at this point in my life, and especially in my career, I don't actively root for teams to lose.
Who are you actively rooting for to lose?
But there's
Jeffrey?
A little part of my sports soul that feels, you know, kind of cleansed, just kind of whole. But when we get to super regional time and fan bases in the SEC suddenly have to realize that college baseball does indeed exist outside of your little 14-team bubble.
And a lot of teams in the tournament. The SEC collectively yesterday in games went 1-4, and the one win was a head-to-head matchup, Tennessee against LSU.
It's a great league. Don't get me wrong.
It's the number one RPI rated league in the country.
It's a competitive league. It's a mother to get through.
Mm-hmm.
All that's true. But there are other places in other parts of the country where they play some damn good college baseball, including...
You think Ole Miss found that out in Tucson?
Ole Miss found that out. You know what? We talked about, you know, Keith talked about it when he was on last Friday, when Kendall Rogers was on with us, the manager at D1Baseball.com. Kendall talked about, hey, keep an eye on that Arkansas-NC State series.
I said, can they really win this? He said, yeah, they can.
Yeah.
And then after 21-2, I was thinking, no, they can't after that. And then Arkansas jumps out 2-0 on Saturday. And then
How
NC State.
How many pitches did Copps end up throwing this weekend?
Well, I'll tell you.
Final tally?
I think the final tally was 313 over the past two weekends. Because I do know this, Jeff. In the regional, in earning two wins and a save, Kevin Copps threw 185 pitches. That's a lot of use.
Yeah.
Then he got the start on yesterday, his first start of the season. Here's a guy who has had won 12 games without a loss and had 10 saves. Unbelievable season. He's going to be, I don't think there's any doubt, Jeff, he's going to be the Golden Spikes Award winner. He's going to be the Dick Houser Award winner. I think he's going to win both of those as well. He's the SEC Pitcher of the Year. And by all accounts, a great young man. Great guy. Was out there well after the game, after they'd lost, the heartbreaker, signing autographs for Arkansas fans for a long time after the game. But, you know, kept going. He gave up two early runs, but really, by and large, pitched extremely well. And gets into the ninth, in the top of the ninth, and that'll be the, you know, the long-debated question about should Dave Van Horn have sent him back to the mound in the top of the ninth inning.
He gave up a bomb that I don't think has landed yet.
It was crushed. And that was, I believe, pitch 118.
So I've got the total.
Yep. What it is
in his that? So for the postseason.
Yep.
5 appearances over 10 days.
Yep.
23 and a third innings.
Yeah.
324 total pitches.
324. 324 pitches over 10 days.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the discussed topic. There's no question about it. But as a texter was earlier pointing out, they were really cut short. Peyton Pallett was knocked out, had injury. They had other injuries as well. So they were not they were shorthanded. But even with that, they were looked at as being, you know, still the team to beat, the number one team in the country, mm-hmm. and they looked the part in the demolition of NC State on Friday.
Here's something interesting, and I'm trying to remember which ESPN analyst said it. I want to say Mike Rooney said it. Maybe it was either during the Big 12 tournament or during the selection show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's true because when I think about Texas, there's one loss that stands out, I think, for Texas fans that they still talk about. If you get to Omaha and you don't win at all, at mm-hmm. least you have the satisfaction that, look, your season ended in Omaha.
Yeah.
Maybe the most painful losses are when you get beat in a super regional.
Yeah.
Because you're right there. And you think about all, you know.
I've heard that said a lot about the Elite Eight in the NCAA basketball tournament.
Augie had teams get to Omaha that didn't finish the job. Like, I know the 04 one is still a loss people talk about. But mm-hmm. a lot of Texas fans, Craig, for a lot of Texas baseball fans that I talk to, that 2010 super regional loss to TCU, that's the one that, in Augie's tenure, that might be the one that stings more than any other one.
Zach Zuby asked me in the dugout, this is about a month or so ago, we were just hanging out in the dugout before a game, and he asked me, what's the best in, he said, how many years have you been doing this? I said, 20 is the primary play-by-play guy. I said, 20. I've been on the broadcast off and on for 24 years, but really is the lead play-by-play voice 20 years. He said, what's the best Texas team you saw? And before I could answer it, Drew Bishop, of course, the ops director who was there at Texas during all this, before I could even answer, he goes, 2010. And I said, he's right. That team went 24-3 in conference play. It's a record that I don't think will ever be broken, first of all, because it would have to take a team losing maybe one game in conference play in 24 tries. That was in a 27-game conference season. They had that unbelievable pitching staff led by the pitcher of the year and Taylor Youngman. And yet, that big incomplete hole is there for them because they lost the third and final game of that Super Regional at home to TCU. Mm-hmm. After they'd beaten them in 3 games the year before, to this day, it is the only Super Regional that Texas has lost. They are 9-1 in Supers. I know, and I made this point last night on the broadcast, that they've been talking on these on all the telecast of all the games, that the team that wins game one of a Super Regional goes on to win that Super Regional 80% of the time. The team that wins its first game, a number one seed, that wins its first game in a regional wins 85% of the time. And I said to Keith Moreland, you know why that percentage is higher? Because Texas skews the number in the Supers. That you say the team that wins game one in a Super Regional wins 80% of the time. In the case of the Longhorns, the team that loses game one wins 80% of the time. They're 4-1 when they lose game one of a Super Regional, including 2002 when they won the national championship, including 2005 when they won the national championship. Now, you know, I don't know if folks are looking for signs. Ooh, maybe they should have lost game one. No, you always want to win game one. They won game one in 03. They won game one in 04. They won game one in 09. They lost game one in 2010 and lost that Super to TCU. They lost game one in 2011. Arizona State won that regional, Super. They won game one in 2014 against Houston, won that Super. Lost game one to Tennessee Tech in 2018, won that Super. And, of course, they won game one the other night. So they are a perfect 5-0 when they win game one in winning the Super. And they are 4-1 when they lose. They're 9-1 in Super Regionals. Overall.
Right, and for those that don't follow college baseball, you're thinking, well, Texas has been to the College World Series 37 times. Those numbers don't make any sense. The Super Regional format's only been around since 99.
That's right. That's when it started, 99. So, anyway, that's...
I don't know why, Craig, but you talk about the best, and maybe, I don't know, Augie's best team. You can debate that till the cows come home, but...
The 02 team had a lot of pop and power in it, and it had that. And the one common thread, Jeff, is all of them could pitch.
Mm-hmm. The 04 team, I thought that there was no question to me they were the best team in the country that year. They were the number one overall seed in the tournament. And I remember they played Vanderbilt in the Supers, and Jeremy Sowers, what did he go, ninth, eighth overall to the Indians?
Yeah.
And he just got just blown obliterated
up. Yep.
In his start in Texas. I'm looking at it right now. They swept Vandy in a Super 15-3 and 10-2.
Yeah. They did not drop a game in the NCAA tournament until they got swept by Fullerton, by Jason Windsor and Ricky Romero, who did tremendous things in that tournament. Windsor, in his prior start, threw 153 pitches when they won an elimination game. And I remember Keith wasn't with me at the ballpark that day, and I was out there because I was doing a show out there, a radio show out there, and I was watching this, and I felt like Mickey the trainer in Rocky III when he's watching, when he was watching Clubber Lang destroy all these opponents. Go, ooh boy, I don't want them to match up with, because I could see what was coming, because both those pitchers were great pitchers, and they won two in a row and beat Texas. So that happened in 04. That was definitely really a really good team as well.
And the 05 team might have been a national seed had they not played Baylor so much during the regular season.
Went 0-4 against the Bears, got swept in the regular season and lost to them in the Big 12 tournament in Oklahoma City when Clay Van Hook had to play catcher. Taylor Teagarden was home injured. They left him home. They left Kyle McCulloch at home. Lost and got to a Saturday to the semifinals with Clay Van Hook, all 155 pounds of him. He's now the third base coach for Skip Johnson in Oklahoma. And Keith Moreland saying on the air, the gear swallows him up. And he did a representative job.
You know, Craig, in my time, and this was actually before I was on the Texas beat, I was covering Baylor at the time, there's a few moments that you just vividly remember. And I'll never forget that third game of the Baylor series in Waco at Baylor Ballpark. Michael Griffin hits one in the gap, and a run scores. And I remember Drew Stubbs picking the ball up, turning around, and just chunking it over the fence into the Brazos.
Yep. Yep. Very, very upset about it. And then they first of all, they were facing elimination at home three times after they lost the Saturday night game to Arkansas. They lost that one like 9-2. Had to come back Sunday behind Adrian Allenies. And beat Miami of Ohio in an elimination game Sunday afternoon, beat Arkansas Sunday night 19-8, and then won Monday afternoon 5-2. So they won three elimination games there. Then after they dropped game one of the Super in Oxford, which was carried over by rain.
Hell of a Super Regional.
Yeah. So they had two more elimination games. They won those, so they won five elimination games. And by the time they got to Omaha, they felt invincible. And there they were playing Baylor, and they wanted them, and they were excited about it, and went out and beat them 5-2 the first game. Then they shut out Tulane, the number one overall seed in the tournament, which had, by the way, their on their team the guy who just coached South Florida in the Super Regional, mm-hmm. and won that. Then beat Baylor in the chance. Wheelis walk-off homer in the semifinals, and then swept Florida. So
Brian Bogusevich was a first-round pick off that Tulane team. Great two-way player.
Absolutely.
Former Astro great.
Yeah. So, okay. I'll take your word on that. Those teams were all constructed, I think, a little bit differently other than that they all had really good pitching.
It feels good. We'll carry this over. We'll talk more baseball in the notebook. It feels good to be talking about a team going to Omaha that's got a real chance to go finish the job.
Yeah, yeah, they're going to try to do that. We'll get to more of that coming up when we continue with Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
The 2-2 pitch, swing and a miss. He struck him out for the 37th time in its history, more than any other school in the nation. The Texas Longhorns are going to the College World Series. The Longhorns defeat South Florida, and they are Omaha bound in 2021.
Back here on Light the Tower, Snoop found it. He found the highlight there, of the final call of that one. So
I shouldn't have labeled things final call when they aren't the final call. I labeled something in the middle of it, final call. Like, why?
It's okay.
What are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, I told you. That's what my three-year-old says. And he had his 3-year-old birthday party. My 3-year-old grandson had his birthday party. He'll come up to you and go, "What are you doing? What's that? What are you doing?" Linda and I sometimes will text each other, and it's all one run-on word. "What are you doing?" You know, it's like, "What are you doing?" So Gideon turned 3 over the weekend. Back here on Light the Tower, and it is time for the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
We'll get back to Longhorn baseball here in just a second, but I know other shows have talked about this topic already, but we haven't. Craig and I were talking about it during the break, which is why it's top of mind. So a lot of preseason magazines are coming out. You know, I picked up a copy of Athlon Sports just to pacify me until Phil Steele comes out. And obviously I pick up Dave Campbell's Texas Football every year. And Greg Tepper and the guys over there do a great job. But did you see, Craig, what's got everybody up in arms about this year's DCTF, not just Texas A&M getting the cover?
So that'll get people up in arms in these parts.
Got to share the wealth on the cover. I see a lot of people. I'm not going to buy it this year. I'm going to cancel my subscription. Well, okay, then next year if Bijan Robinson's on the cover, you'll buy it again, or you're going to buy it regardless. So.
Seriously, you cancel subscription just because there's Aggies on the cover?
There's a select few, and that goes the other way
too. It is football in the state of Texas.
It goes the other way too. Aggies do it when a Longhorn gets on the cover, or Baylor or TCU gets the cover, whatever. Yeah. But have you seen what really has Longhorn fans up in arms? So every year they do their all-Texas college team. And, you know, they'll put some of the content out in advance of the magazine release just to give you a few nibbles here and there. And I saw their all-Texas college team. What's got a lot of Texas fans up in arms, Craig, is Bijan Robinson. He's on the team.
Okay.
He's on the team as a running back. On the second team.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently he's no better than the third best running back in the state. Sincere McCormick at UTSA is one first team running back. Isaiah Spiller at A&M is the other first team running back.
Okay.
Now, I understand the interesting situation the guys at DCTF are in.
The dilemma?
You got to spread the wealth because you got to sell magazines. You got to make everybody. I remember, I don't know how it is now, but I remember like when Randy Rogers was doing the super team, you had to find a kid from the Valley to put somewhere. Because you got to spread the wealth a little bit.
Or El Paso or the Panhandle.
Yeah, you got to make sure all the major areas are satisfied, if you will. But I think this, Craig, is taking a little bit too far. You're going to tell me that Bijan Robinson's at best the number 3 Division I running back in the state? I think not. So I think there's a fine line between distribution of wealth, if you will, and just straight up overthinking something.
There's a line because, you know, you can trace a lot of things, by the way, to the Star Wars catalog. Okay. Yeah. There's a line in episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, where Emperor Palpatine is trying to lure a young Anakin Skywalker to the dark side, which he ultimately succeeds in doing, but at the time he's not.
Spoiler alert, by the way.
Yeah, right. And they're watching some weird looking show. Looks like some underwater sea show thing. It was very strange, but anyway, he was talking about all the different nuances, and he said even the things from the dark side. And Skywalker kind of turns to him and says, "You know about the dark side?" And he goes, "Anakin, when you are a senator," because he was a senator at the time, "you have to take a more global view of everything. You can't just staple yourself to the dogmatic approach of the Jedi," he says. "The Sith," you know, and he explains it. He says he has to take a global view, a more universal approach. And I'm not saying that Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine is the dark side or anything like that, or the evil empire, or that Greg Tepper is a Sith Lord. I'm not saying any of that.
You aren't saying he's not.
Greg, whoever your team is, Greg Tepper hates your team.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And they're fond of saying that there. But they do have to look at it on a larger scale. Now, I'm with you on that. I think that Bijan Robinson is the best college football running back in the state.
And they actually, and their superlative is they list Sincere McCormick at UTSA as the best running back, the best FBS running back in the state. Now, he's a good player.
Had more rushing yards, right?
But if you watched, I don't know, the last four, any portion of the last four games Texas played, specifically the last two, there's a reason, Craig, why in some Heisman odds he's getting the best odds for, like if you look at non-quarterbacks, there's some betting lines where he's got the best odds to win the Heisman Trophy in 2021.
Yeah, yeah, he does. And Sincere McCormick was an outstanding running back at Converse Judson. You remember him there, Snoop, when he was doing that?
Yeah.
I remember Lake Travis shutting him down, too. After the year before in the season opener, he ran through the Cavaliers' defense and beat him. That was the first, by the way, Texas Football Days game played. That was on that Friday night there in San Antonio. Sincere McCormick had a stellar high school career, and he's been really good in college. So,
two Judson Rockets on this list in terms of the superlatives: DeMarvin Leal, best defensive lineman in Texas. I don't disagree.
You don't have an argument there, do you?
No,
I don't either. So anyway, that's the great thing also about Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine is that they have that healthy debate.
It's still weird for me to flip through that magazine and see that, why is there an SEC preview? Oh, yeah, because
it's
SEC representation in the state.
That's true.
Just a little weird. Let's finish this up with some Texas baseball conversation, Craig. So I was recording Longhorn Blitz, finishing that up, so I missed the first segment. Didn't get to give my thoughts in case anybody needs to hear me pontificate on the baseball program. I did a little bit this morning with Bucky and Aaron in the 8 o'clock hour. But I think, Craig, you know, when I think about this team, and we talked about some of Augie's great teams, and this is the second team David Pierce will have taken to Omaha. And who knows, it could have been the third. I mean, had they gotten out of that Long Beach regional in 17 after they won the first two games, they might have hosted a super that year.
Might have. And remember, they started 14-3 last year before the shutdown.
Exactly. So when I think about this team, you can look at, you know, I think there's a couple things to stand out. One, I think when you, we talked about it with him when we had Coach Pierce on last week. I go back to a meeting he had with myself and a few of the other writers right after he took the job. We're having lunch at Dish Falk, and we're talking about recruiting and philosophy. And he said, you know, his goal was to put together an offense capable of scoring in multiple ways. And I know that's easy to say, but you look at the kind of, and the approach they wanted to take in recruiting, Craig, they wanted to take guys with impressive raw tools, and basically we will turn them into baseball players.
Right.
We want athletes. We want speed. You know, all the stuff that you basically can't coach. And we feel confident, this is David Pierce talking, they feel confident in their ability to develop players that they'll turn them into ball players. And they've done that with the guys they've got. You've got, at this point, I think Vanderbilt probably has, clearly has the best 1-2 punch in the country with Jack Leiter and Kamar Rocker.
Mm-hmm.
Find me a better three-man rotation, the Madden, Stevens, and Hanson. I challenge you to do it. With the power arms at the back of the bullpen have been, even though Keaton Ian and Nixon have been seldom used in the postseason,
right?
The bullpen was a big question mark going into the year. It's not anymore. Defensively, there were some spots that needed to be solidified that were question marks. They're not anymore. This is an elite defensive team. But, Craig, and I go back to something Augie used to say. And baseball is one of those games when if you start pressing and start trying to make things happen, that's when the game can get away from you and it can start to go downhill real fast. That said, this team's ability, whenever they get punched in the mouth, to be able to come right back and respond, given that weird nature of baseball, that is really, really hard to do. That's something really special about a team. And the fact that they respond time and time again, they trailed for a half an inning in the entire NCAA tournament so far. And they came back, they got down 2-0, had the 4-run inning, and then boom, they were off and running. So I think it's just, of all the things I said, I think it's just their ability to respond. They don't get too high. They don't get too low. They're just kind of even keeled. They've got a really nice mix of guys that have been there before, been there, done that. The Zach Zubias of the world, Mike Antigo has played a lot of college baseball, and you've got young guys, a Mitchell Daly, guys that are still trying to figure it out. And even your sophomores, Doug Hodo, Trey Faltini, they only got 17 games last year. So it's not like they're seasoned veterans.
No, they're technically redshirted freshmen.
Yeah, I love the mix that this team has. I love the pieces they've got. But just that resiliency, and that's the kind of stuff you can't coach.
There's a couple of things that are also that will add to that. I agree with all of what you're saying there. A couple other things. This team, as the season has progressed, has found a way, and this is something I haven't seen Texas teams do that often, is they will have, at various points in the season, parts of the lineup go into slumps or mini slumps. When that happens, what has happened is other parts of the lineup that might have been slumping at the time or might have been okay and trying to pick up, really ratchet up what they've done. I'll give you the Super Regionals example. On Saturday night, the 4, 5, and 6 hitters, Ivan Melendez, Cam Williams, and Doug Hodo went a combined 0 for 12 at the plate. I asked David Pierce about that in the pregame before yesterday evening. He said, we just want them to stay on time. Be on time, be quick on the fastball, and wait on the breaking ball, not the other way around. And there was some of that. And we're just saying, don't worry about it. In the meantime, however, the bottom of the lineup continued to produce. Trey Faltini has an 11-game hitting streak going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then Eric Kennedy, who had been kind of almost left for dead a little bit, and in fact had started to become platooned with Dylan Campbell, had as good a 5 games in the regional super as just about any Longhorn. He did a tremendous job. So, and of course, got the game-winning hit on Saturday night. And Mike Antico has just been on a tear. Even Zach Zuby had fallen off. He comes back through, and he extended his streak at the tail end of it last night. But then, last night, Melendez gets a hit after he'd started off struggling. He fights his way through, gets a hit. And then, when they pitch hit for him, Peyton Powell gets an RBI hit. And so he gets a base hit, and then he scores ahead on the 2-run homer. And Cam Williams walks 4 times, and as he's standing up there, I'm asking Keith Moreland, I said, how many times was the most you ever walked in the game? Because he talked about how unusual it would be to walk 5 times in a game. And I said, how many times did you walk in the game? He said, 4. I got walked 4 times. And I said, and then so when he got up there for the 5th time, he took a couple of hard rips and fouled off, and I said, I have a feeling he's not wanting to walk this time. Keith goes, well, you might get help with it. And right about that time, he just crushed it over the 405 mark. And Doug Hodo, by the way, had a couple of hits and helped out as well. So anyway, when one part of the lineup is not hitting on all cylinders, another part has stepped up. And that hasn't always been the case with Texas teams. So that was impressive to see.
Cam had one of those Barry Bonds circa 2001 nights in the box score where you walk 4 times and the one hit you get is a 2-run bomb.
And it's a bomb. He crushed it right over the 405 mark. All right, we'll be back to wrap up today's edition of Light the Tower on the Horn.
In Austin, it's always...
Got just a few minutes to go here before we wrap it up. Just a few minutes before the first of the 2 games that will fill out the right side of the bracket. For those of you looking on Twitch, you can see where I really was putting it. A lot of work is kind of wrinkled and written up there, but there it is. The left side of the bracket for the College World Series already set. An unseeded North Carolina State team against a 9-seed Stanford. About that matchup, and then Arizona and Vanderbilt, which will probably be the primetime game. I'm going to guess those games will be Saturday, and that the very first game will be NC State-Stanford, and then Saturday night will be Arizona and Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
And then on Sunday, whoever wins this DBU-Virginia game, which is going to start in about 10 minutes, against Tennessee, I think that would be the day game on Sunday, and I think Texas against the winner of Notre Dame and Mississippi State will be Sunday night. That's my guess. We'll find out for sure.
I think you would want whichever one of your – I haven't looked at Vandy's rotation. Whichever one of those Vandy arms is going first.
It'll be Rocker.
You'd want that in prime time on Saturday. And then the Sunday night game, it's Texas in one of 2 national seeds that's still left standing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that's going to be my guess. It'll be that way. And obviously, we're – excited about it going forward. At some point later this week, I'll be headed up to Omaha with the Longhorns, and then there will be shows from up there, and then Jeff will be down here. And your plan, I think, what is eventually to matriculate north to Douglas County, Nebraska, I believe.
Going to play it by ear.
Yeah.
Play it by ear, see what happens. But, yeah, if all goes according to plan, which
yeah.
can't ever look too far ahead for these things. Yeah, I would like to be in Omaha at some point, so we'll see how it goes. Hey, teaser for tomorrow.
Oh, by the way, we had somebody text me and ask about places to eat. Tomorrow, I'll give you the restaurant guide for Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay. And let me just say, Craig gave me restaurant recommendations when I was up there. If I make it up there, there's a breakfast spot with my name all over it.
Yeah, because hey, you do, because my name's been on it too.
The other teaser for tomorrow, Bud Elliott at 24/7 Sports, my colleague, his annual blue chip ratio article is out. This gives you the list of teams based on their percentage of blue chip prospects that should contend for a national championship. Texas is on it.
There you go.
And we'll talk about where exactly the Longhorns rank.
You know, I better know about the restaurants, and this is going to be my 9th trip to Omaha with the Longhorns and my 11th overall. I went twice to do games for Westwood One, so better figure it out by now, the street plan and the restaurant guide. So we're going to give you that tomorrow on the show.
Go DBU.
They're getting ready to start. Dallas Baptist could make it 2 teams from the state of Texas if the Patriots can win their deciding 3rd game of their Super Regional with Virginia, played in Columbia, South Carolina. Thanks to our man behind the glass, our producer, Snoop Daniel. For Jeff Howe, I'm Craig Way. We invite you to stay tuned. Up next, it'll be Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. We'll visit with you tomorrow right here on Light the Tower on the Horn.